at this year? Okay, good. Tomorrow we have also a big day. All right, today is Sunday, December 30th, 2018. Wow, the year is flying by. And as I speak to you this Sunday morning to my students here, my students all over the world, I feel like an atom bomb has just dropped on me and those who think the way I do. You heard the news. The Mizrahi is following the tradition of Agudat Yisrael and split. And I just wrote to someone, I just wrote the email for Sherry to send out that I'll support the Bayit Yehudi. And now I have to reevaluate everything, but give it a little chance, time. But very frightening, because we can wind up wasting hundreds of thousands of votes that won't count when every splinter party doesn't pass. All right, be it as it may, that's why I'm a Rebbe and not a politician, for better or for worse.
Is that your vote-sharing agreement?
Vote-sharing is only after you pass.
Oh, yeah?
Of course. You have to pass. What happens with all the other votes, they divide it up into all the parties according, like, if you got 12% of the votes, you get 12% of the votes that don't count. You follow? So it's lost. Okay, let the politicians worry about it, and let the Rebbe teach. Now, a number of, if we spoke about the light table, and if I understand this email correctly, Aaron Rakefet is dancing a kazatska with joy, because once again, he was mechaven to the Rav's thinking. And Shalom Simon, Shalom Simon, please let me know if I understand your email correctly. But Shalom Simon says, just a quick comment. I heard from Rabbi Seth Mendel. Do you all know who Rabbi Seth Mendel is? Rabbi Seth Mendel grew up in Boston. He grew up on the Rav's lap. He grew up in Maimonides. And he's one of the ranking experts in the world today on kashrut regarding meat. He works for the OU. And he knew the Rav intimately.
Did he lose his son?
I don't know. Rabbi Seth Mendel said about the Rav, he used the thunder. Hashem already gave us a light table. It's called the sky. Okay, so it's what I told you, that originally when we're choshe shoots, so you hold the piece of lettuce up. Okay.
Wait, you're washing lettuce in the basement kitchen.
Yomo, don't confuse me with the facts. Just let us stand with the rub. I enjoyed that immensely. Now, my nephew Zev, Dr. Rothkopf, I must have very bright nephews, that's all I can tell you. One of his brothers, a big Rosh Yeshiva, and he's a dentist, but he knows a great deal. So he tells me, hi, Uncle Aaron, Tzipori used the knife, Tzua, to do the Brit. The same type of blade was used by Yoshua when they came to Eretz Yisrael. Charvot Tzurim is what it says in Nach. It was a knife made of flint. Even today, the halacha is that the knife for the Brit or for the Shechita can be made of non-metallic substances. A laser does not cut. It ablates. Something like evaporation. The energy causes coagulation of the blood. I hope you all understand that, because I don't. But halacha lemaisa, there's a big difference between the knife and the...
I understand it.
Herbie, who can be as smart as you?
Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
A little of a background.
Okay, well, say that you're a pharmacist. What do you want out of me? And I just want to say... One second, and someone else told me, I'm trying to find it, that here it is, from Michael Appel, that the good medical translation of the word sriva in Rabbi Asher Weiss's tshuva is catheterization, so that when you do a cataract today, how do you do it? You do it with laser, that's the word. So when you deal with laser, the word that for the tsriva, that it stops the bleeding, is cauterization. All right, I stand corrected on that, and I'm sure that, Herb, you know that as well. Also, my nephew Zev corrects me, not corrects me, I told you Kapotaka appears in the Gemara as being in Afriki. However, this Afriki is not the continent of Africa, but an area in Turkey. Till this day, it is called Kapodosia, and it's a famous and it's a famous tourist site. I got to tell you, my nephew knows a great deal. But anyway, I was only whatever. But all I can say is that my Rebbeim always called it Africa, so at least I was not off. They got it from the word Afriki, and let it stand. Whatever you wish, it's. Okay, so this is all taken care of. Oh, and my nephew also corrected me on something else. When I quoted the Ramban, I don't know which class I did it in, but I quoted the Ramban, HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim, it's this week's Pasha, it's coming Shabbos. So the Ramban says he used the word Chaldean names for the month. And he says, why don't we use Hebrew names to remind us where we come from? That's why Herbie Maltz remains Herbie and Ani Rothkopf remains Ani.
You just insist on I'm
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. You did nothing wrong as Herbie and you certainly did nothing wrong as Chaim. But there's a message that the world has to admire you, that with all that you went through and as successful you were in America, you said goodbye and came in Aliyah a few good years ago already.
10 years ago.
Yeah, so the Ramban is right. But my nephew, so I think I said to you that Ziv, we have Hebrew names. Now, I checked the Ramban, what I was adding to the Ramban. The Ramban doesn't say it, but it's in my mind that 50, 60, 70 years ago, a Rebbe said this. We have Hebrew names. So my high uncle Aaron Ziv and Bulan Eitanim are the Canaanite month names. Then Hebrew names are numbers like Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Chodesh Rishon, Chodesh Sheni, Chodesh Shlishi. Be it as it may, fine. But I stand corrected. And Ziv, go and dream, that's a Canaanite name. We use it today as a Hebrew word. Eitan is a Hebrew word. Eitanara had a student, she's no longer alive, Eitana Gordon is Zichrona Levracha, is a wonderful young lady, Nebuch, a young mother, children married to a student of mine, had come in Aliyah, so she was Eitana, and we used the word Eitan, it's a name for boys, and Eitan, Eitanim, it's modern Hebrew. Alright, one other bit of business. If anyone here needs credit for this class, for Smicha, let me know. And if in the future you need the credit, just let me know, because I'm recording. I have a record of everyone who attends the Shia, and I'll be happy to give you credit down the line. If you're an official student in Reitz, why not? Okay, now we're picking up on a very important topic. A very interesting question. A question that obviously is not free of political incantations, to put it that way. What's very fascinating is who asked the question, and here I want to spend the next few minutes telling you about two Rabbi Shmuel Turk. Some of you may get involved in research, and in the Monday class we'll come back to some of these names. So I want to give you the inside story, who they are and how they're related, and not to confuse them, because there are many examples of people have confused them, even in print, where they attribute the article to the wrong Rabbi Turk. Now, how do I know all this? I had a classmate, was not exactly a classmate, it was a year or two behind me, but a contemporary in the yeshiva, Rabbi Marvin Schneider. Maybe some of you know the name. I once told you he's the clockmaster of New York. He appeared on the front page of the New York Times recently, adjusting the clocks when they changed the hour. And a very interesting individual, a Talmud Chacham, a Seifer, I imagine he's also a Mohel, and I think he worked in social services for the city for many years. He's practically my age, so obviously he's retired today, but he has the, probably pay some sort of honorarium, clockmaster of the city. His son is Josh Schneider, who is my sub-student, my virtual student. Now, Josh wrote me a long email. You'll see why he knows so much. Everyone confuses the two Rabbi Turks as they were both Shmuel. However, there is a difference. Rabbi Dr. Samuel Turk was one of the Rabbi Turks. Rabbi Seymour was the other. They were first cousins. Now, their biographies are interested. The Rabbi Dr. Sam is a Torah Vadas graduate. He was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Shlomo Hyman. Some of you know from my Monday class, I've spoken many times about Rabbi Shlomo Hyman, because what we call YU today brought Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik to America. So as a result of that, Torah Vadas wanted a big Litvish Talmud Chacham to attract students, to rival Rabbi Moshe. And they brought Rabbi Shlomo Hyman to America. He was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Baruch Be'alevovich, and he was a first-rate Litvische Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Sam Turk was a Torah Vadas boy, was his Talmud. He wrote Sfarim. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was married to the daughter of Rabbi Chaya Moshe Friedman, who was a Sheikhet in Meridian, Connecticut. Why does the name Rabbi Friedman mean so much to me? Because there's a picture in my book on Rabbi Revel, and I identify someone there as Rabbi Moshe Aaron Paleyev. I was corrected, and we've never gotten a complete identity who it totally was. But some of the people who corrected me or claimed that I was wrong said it was Rabbi Chaim Moshe Friedman, who was a well-known sheikhet. Now, he had daughters, and he raised frum daughters. This is not a small matter to raise frum children in the 1920s, the 1930s, was not a small matter. So one of the daughters married Rabbi Sam Turk. The other daughter married Rabbi Dr. Meir Karlin. Does the name Rabbi Meir Karlin mean anything to you? Again, this is living history. Rabbi Meir Karlin was the Moskva Eloi. He was an Ely, grew up in Moscow, ran away from the communists, reached America, a young kid, went on to YU. I still remember him, a big Ely, a doctorate in mathematics, a genius mind, the nicest person alive. He was a Rebbe in BTA. You know what BTA are, Benjamin, you're never going to know in 100 years. Talmudical Academy at one time had a branch. TA begins in Manhattan. Later, all the Jews are in Brooklyn. So they had a branch in Manhattan, a branch in Brooklyn. Today, if you would have a branch of Yeshiva University in Flatbush, where BTA was, it would be stoned. You understand? Because all of Brooklyn has gone right wing. How Torah Vadas appointed a YU graduate, the Rosh Yeshiva, is a credit to Torah Vadas. But not easy. There was plenty of criticism under the carpet. But at one time, BTA was a major institute. Rabbi Zuroff headed it. Meir Kahane was in the first graduating class. It was Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz. Rabbi Steve Riskin. So it was quite an institution. Now, this was Rabbi Sam Turk. Rabbi Seymour Turk, who happens to be Josh Schneider's great uncle, Rabbi Seymour Turk also went to Torah Vadas. Then he came to YU and he got smicha in 1932. He got smicha in the class with Reb Moshe Bick, if that name means anything. Well, later he was the big posek in the Bronx, then he becomes the posek of Borough Park. This was that class, the early 30s from YU. Now, coming back to Seymour Turk, and we'll always refer Rabbi Sam Turk, Rabbi Seymour Turk. Rabbi Seymour Turk was one of the top rabbis in Brooklyn. And Julie Berman, who knew the scene quite well, maybe you recognize the name, he was from Rabbi Lichtenstein's class, he should live and be well. Julie, very prominent lawyer, activist, OU, recognized the name, Julius Berman, an uncle to the president, Rabbi Dr. Avi Berman, correct. So Julie Berman told Josh Schneider that the Brooklyn Mafia were three prominent YU rabbis who stuck together, Rabbis Turk, Berzon, and Wahlberg. And Enoch Hinami, when I was growing up, these were three names in golden letters. They said Rabbi Wahlberg, he was a short man, it's interesting, like Rabbi Joe Lookstein, the short people can speak, it's beyond words, how capable they are.
Thank you.
No, I say that, this is a fact. And Rabbi Seymour Turk was very close to Dr. Belkin, and one of the people that Dr. Belkin sought advice from. And in the book called Washington, From Washington Avenue to Washington Street, there's a picture, he's absolutely right, there's a picture in the book of the Rabbanim, the RCA rabbis, at some convention, dancing around Rabbis Belkin and Soloveitchik. It's this picture. If you look at the book, you'll see the picture a lot better. And right here, the second one from the left is Rabbi Seymour Turk. I can identify some of the others. There's Rabbi Rackman there. There's Rabbi Heschel Schachter. There's Rabbi Josh Lookstein. And they're all dancing around Rabbi Belkin and Rabbi Soloveitchik. So here you have two cousins, first cousins, two Talmidei Chachamim, two Torah Vadas boys. Both of them have a connection to YU afterwards. Rabbi Sam, Rabbi Seymour is a YU musmach. Rabbi Sam, who was total Torah Vadas product, later gets a doctorate. I believe it's from Bernard Rebel Graduate School, if I'm not mistaken. He was Rabbi Doctor. But hashkafa-wise, there was a slight chasm in between them, and that is very simple. Rabbi Seymour Turk goes on to become very important, and one of the leaders, I have to check, we might reach him in the other class, but I believe he was might have even been president, held high office in the RCA. Rabbi Sam Turk was slightly more right-wing, and he is one of the founders of the Igud HaRabbanim. Now, as I told you last week, the Igud HaRabbanim, as it began, and we'll talk about this in the Monday class, but very briefly, just to understand, because there's political inference in this tshuva that we have to lay out before we begin. What are we talking about? Originally in America, the first rabbinic group of Orthodox rabbis was the Agudas HaRabbanim, which began in 1902, right after the death of Rabbi Jacob Joseph, the first great rabbi to come to America, known as the chief rabbi of New York. Endless aggravation. He dies young. It's a tragic, tragic story. Right after he dies, literally the week of his funeral, it was planned, even without his dying, but it happened. It's very moving, like Menashemayim. God is telling us, you killed the greatest rabbi who came, do something. So they organized the Agudas HaRabbanim. The Agudas HaRabbanim was organized, it was all Europeish or European Rabbanim, and as the years moved on, they refused to take in American-trained rabbis. They viewed American-trained rabbis as second-rate. What do you know? How do you know? What are you talking about? So this American rabbi would say, look, I learned 100 blot Gemara already in my life. You learned 100 blot? When I was your age, we learned 100 blot a year. How old are you? You're 25, and it took you 25 years to learn 100 blot Gemara? When we were 25, we already made a Siyum Shas a time and a half. And the Agudat Rabbanim made that decision. In retrospect, it was a tragic decision, but that was the decision they made. So the Rabbinical Council of America gets off the floor in the 1930s. It really starts functioning after World War II. It becomes a major rabbinic organization. But who do you have in the Rabbinical Council of America? Essentially, it is 90% graduates of Yeshivas Ribitz Kochanan, Reitz, YU, popular language, and Skokie, Chicago, Hebrew Theological College, the Beis Medrash LaTorah in Chicago. You understand, in America, these were the two major institutions that turned out Orthodox rabbis. Now, by then, there were some Torah Vadas boys, some RJJ boys, some Chaim Berlin boys in RCA, but ultimately they were viewed, if they joined the RCA and they were friendly with YU and Reitz introduced a new category, an associate rabbinic alumni. Are you familiar with that? That you could apply and to YU and put in your credentials, and they would claim that you're an associate, even though you graduated Torah Vadas, you graduated Chaim Berlin, but you were part of the Yeshiva Nursery Rabbinical, how does it go, YURA, Yeshiva Nursery Rabbinic Alumni. You follow? They were called associates. So it shows that's where their mind was. But beginning tomorrow, I'm going to talk about post-World War II in America. Post-World War II in America, the right wing slowly but slowly develops, takes place, influences, changes the cause and of Torah in the United States. And they know two ways about that. And they start to look down upon YU graduates. They start to look down upon Torah Vadas guys, Chaim Berlin guys who associate with YU, who associate with RCA. And there were very important differences. And I'll give you the most major, two major differences that make this come to life. One is very simple, and anyone who grew up at that time will certify it. Yeshiva University and many graduates of RJJ, Chaim Berlin, Torah Vadas, took shtelas where there was no mechitza. Some were fortunate enough that the men and women sat separately, and some literally had mixed seating. And you could have a setup, when we spoke about that last week in class, remember I asked about a certain shul in Northeast Philadelphia. So there were three different areas, men, women, and men and women together. Did the Rosh Yeshiva like this? Well, let's put it this way. Bal kocha yanu amen. Their attitude was, look, give it a chance. In Chicago, Rabbi Regensburg, who was the main Rosh Yeshiva, Chaim David Regensburg, he was very open, and he felt this was important. Go in. It's better to have an Orthodox rabbi than a conservative rabbi. Yes, it's not right not to have a mechitza, but it's better than all the other changes that will happen if you don't take the shtela. In YU, technically, you had to get permission, and they would tell you, all right, take it for 2 years and we'll reevaluate. And that's the famous story with Rabbi Riskin here. So I'm not telling any secrets here. He writes about it, but I lived it. I lived it with him. I remember his consulting me, that Rabbi Belkin came to Rabbi Riskin, and this already is the early 60s. This is maybe 59, 60, that's probably 60. Rabbi Belkin came to Rabbi Riskin, maybe 61, and he says to Rabbi Riskin, I've been approached from the Upper West Side, a conservative temple, and some of the Balabatim are not happy with the conservative temple. They'd like to try out an Orthodox rabbi. And Rabbi Riskin says, will there be separate seating? Will there be a mechitza? And Rabbi Belkin says, no, but you take and see what you can do. And Rabbi Riskin says, Steve says, I got to consult with the Rav. He goes to the Rav, and the Rav tells him, no, it's not for you. 1 week later, the Rav sends for Riskin and tells him, quoting the Rav now, I'm testing your spiritual tenacity. I think give it a chance, take it, and we'll see a year or two from now, we'll reevaluate. What it means, Rabbi Rubin is right, Rabbi Belkin, I can probably tell you the conversation. Don't quote me because I wasn't there, but I'm willing to bet 99% correct. Rabbi Belkin sent a very, what's the said, I don't think you're going from Zinnen. You went off the path. I don't know. What's with you? Do you have any idea of us for geld is dort and how much money, what we're talking about, the Upper West Side? Und Riskin can, Abe Aina can. If anyone can do it, Riskin can do it. So the Raven, and as they say, the rest is history. But that story is indicative of what it was like in the rabbinate. I can only tell you from my own experience that the only question I had to answer when I got smicha, I remember, I was a different person then. I was Ani Rothkopf. My goal in life was to make every Jew in America a Shomer Shabbos. Today, 80 years later, my goal in life is to see every American Jew come in Aliyah and be a good Jew, al admat hakodesh. But yeah, we change. We have different attitudes, different feelings, different thinking. So the only question I had to answer, will you take ishtela without a mechitza? And my answer was no. But this was the mentality. And even in the rabbinate, I told you, I in 63, my vice president, the shul I built in Makewood, my vice president died, the Abridin. I remember the name, Ad Kedei Kach. And I eulogized him. And a very prominent conservative rabbi where his children went to shul, Louis Levitsky, this was a reconstructionist, drove on Shabbos to shul, and he comes over to me, I have a shtela for you, $25,000, could you imagine, I'm making $4,000 from the yeshiva, Rosh Yeshiva, and $4,000 from my shul, and here he's offering me $25,000. And I say to him, is there mechitza? And he got hysterical. What are you, a masochist? You torture your wife, you torture your children. He took for granted, you offer someone $25,000, which would be like today, someone coming to me and offering me $500,000. That what $25,000 at that time was every bit of not $500,000, $400,000. And I turned him down on the spot. But this was the world. Now, Tera Vadas and Chaim Berlin graduates at that point, you were offered a shtela, you went to Rav Hutner, who we spoke about in the Monday class for 2 years or a year, you go to Rav Hutner and you say, should I take the shtela? He chop your head off. What are you, a conservative rabbi? And there were Chaim Berlin graduates who became totally conservative. You went, could you imagine a Teira Vadas graduate? Can I take a conservative shtela? Absolutely not. Now, that was one big difference. The second difference, which we're going to talk about at length in the Monday class, and it's a problem that we live with until today, and if you read the weekend papers and the weekend freebies, the problem doesn't leave us alone. It's a very simple problem. How do you relate to Reform and Conservative Judaism? According to the official word, the State of Israel, a guy like Netanyahu, a guy even like from Bennett, from they viewed it's look, it's different streams. It's Elu v'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. A Talmud, a very dear Talmud, was speaking to me last week about Rabbi Hartman, David Hartman, and he told me he now has learned that Hartman is Chutz L'Tchum. He always thought Elu v'Elu. Hartman's also an Orthodox Jew. I told him, I'm the most open-minded person in the world, but there's a halachic fence. We can't go beyond that fence. And Hartman broke the fence. And we look at Reform, we look at conservative. Who can say streams of Judaism? Who could use that word? And that's why I personally, Chaim, stopped using Moshe. I stopped using the word Orthodox. Because Orthodox implies there's conservative, there's reformed. Orthodox is a terrible word. It means narrow-mindedness, one opinion. Our enemies gave us that title. I'm narrow-minded. I'm a Litvak, but I'm open enough to understand there's Chassidim, and there's Aguder, and there's Mizrahi, and we should only respect each other, and what unites us is much more important than that which divides us hashkafic-wise. But there's no question that I can't view Reform, conservative, that's not a Jewish way of life. I'm not saying they're not Jews. Some of them are Jews. If they're born of a Jewish mother, they are Jewish. Could very well be most of the Reform who claim they're Reform are not Jewish halachically today. That's a different story. But I have to view them and say to them, you do not lead a Torah lifestyle. Now, this problem exploded in America. I'll go into much more detail in the Monday class. RCA people were quite free with Reform and Conservative rabbis. RCA congregations at that time, the OU, remember we're talking the 1950s into the 60s, we're not talking today. The OU congregations, even the Young Israel congregations, they were on very good terms with conservative temples, reform temples. They all joined together in synagogue council. There were many graduates of Torah Vadas and Chaim Berlin who felt alienated, underlined the word alienated, by this approach. And that's why Igud HaRabbanim, the Rabbinical Alliance of America, was organized. And Rabbi Sam Turk, the Torah Vadas Bar, who has a doctorate from Yeshiva University, but who remained more Torah Vadas than Ritz, if I can put it that way, in contradistinction to his first cousin, who was also a Torah Vadas boy, but his smicha later is from Yeshiva YU, from Reeds. He was RCA. And the Rabbinical Alliance already was quite a number of shades to the right of RCA. With me? Now, that difference continues until today. Over the years, the RCA became very powerful. And with the swing to the right, even the RCA became more right-wing. Rabbinical Alliance was one time a more major organization, but over the years, the differences between RA and RCA were very small. Today, in the year 2019, could be that the Rabbinical Alliance is enjoying a rebirth. You have to understand that the swing to the right in modern Orthodoxy, so-called, what I call Western Orthodoxy, the swing to the right engendered a swing to the left. And you can see it right here in Griscolil. In the 1990s in Griscolil, almost every last student wore a black hat. Today, not everyone wears a black hat. What would you say, Benjamin? What percentage? Moshe, what percentage of the Kollel? What would you say?
About
10. Only 10%?
Like 3 out of 32.
3 out of... Oh, so all right. I thought it's a little bit more. It doesn't matter. Once you say 10%, 20%, it just proves my point. That today, it has engendered a swing to the left. And there are some people in RCA who are very unhappy, and I happen to know from within that they're interested in revitalizing the Rabbinical Alliance. All right, now with that introduction being said, you can understand the question. It's both a question, but a question mit ashtach. In other words, yeah, how do you say that in English? It's very hard to translate. Ashtach. You're stabbing. In other words, you have something, there's the halachic question, but beneath the surface, there is a hashkafic, philosophic inference. Now, this tshuva, it opens a world that we haven't really solved this problem totally until today. The only place it's really solved is in Israel with our armed forces. But very fascinating. And as I said, it will lead to the longest tshuva we have from the Rav. Remember, the Rav was not a posek in the sense of Rav Meisha, but on this topic, he wrote a very long tshuva, which thank God has been published. We all knew it existed, but it wasn't published until recently after his death with all the books coming out from Torah Karav. Now, I'm quoting from Mishnah Halachot, Chelek Gimel, Siman Lamed Hei. And this tshuva, we have a date. The tshuva was written in 1960. It was written to Reb Shmuel Turk. How do we know it's the Shmuel Turk that I'm referring to? How do we know it's Sam and not Simoa? Nasi Igud HaRabbanim B'Atzot HaBrit. the president of the Rabbinical Alliance in America. So you have two cousins, first cousins, one Rabbinical Alliance and one RCA. And he writes to him, Kvod yedid nafshi nechmad v'naim shmo mefarim harav hagon chorif charif ubaki. Kvod shen tifato malatu kvodo harav rav shmuel Turk shlita nasi igudet harabanim. And all right, when you get those titles, it shows that the Mishnah Halacha, that Rav Menashe Klein, had great, great respect for him. And he says, I've received your question, your wonderful letter with all the sources, and you asked whether a Jewish person or a Rav Yisrael, now it's very interesting, a Jewish person, tell me, we have a number of rabbis sitting in this room. What, we're not Jewish people? What's the difference? No, but I'll tell you what it means. It operates on two levels. Herbie Maltz reaches America. Herb, what other languages do you know besides Yiddish, Hebrew, and English? Do you know Polish?
I make sure I forgot it.
You forgot. But did you know it in the 1950s?
Only language I knew.
Only language you knew. So, the American army wants him as a translator. They've now occupied Poland after World War II. They're dealing with the Russians. You know Polish. No, are you allowed to enlist in the army?
I was too young.
But many people, I have a Talmud, Normie Gold. Maybe you've heard his name, Dr. Norman Gold, an oral surgeon, retired. He always stresses retired, so people shouldn't open their mouths. But he was a very skilled oral surgeon. So Normie's aunt, he had one aunt, I think she had the rank of colonel in the American Army. Why, what happened? After Shomeret Shabbat, after World War II, they needed people who were fluent in German. And she had that type of marriage where her husband said go, and she went, and she was at one of the translators at the Nuremberg trials. But her native language was German. The Gold family comes from Germany. So now, the question is on one level, can a simple Jew volunteer for the American army? On a second level, can Rabbi Reuben, Musmach of Reitz, rabbi, can the rabbi volunteer for the American army? The question is asked on two levels. Now, this question with Rav Menashe Klein gets off the floor on a mundane level, if you'll see in a second, a simple Jew. The Rav's question already is totally dealing with a rabbi. And what's the question? And he says, the naval reserves, by the way, Rav Menashe Klein by 1960 knew a little bit English, probably knew English perfectly, I would say. So he has here in parentheses, Chel Hamilim Hanikra, Naval Reserves Balaz, transliterated into Yiddish. That's what it's called. And if he will be accepted, volunteered into the army, he will work there via Hemuchrach Gam Lechalel Shabbat Shem Kedat HaTzavah. He'll have to be Mechalel Shabbat because this is the way the army works. He will have no choice. Dinan Malchuta, the army will, by the way, when he uses the word Dinan Malchuta here, it's not really applicable. Dinan Malchuta is only in monetary matters. It has nothing to do with spiritual matters. But what he means, Dinan Malchuta, when you're in an army, the army has to function. The army has to function on Shabbos. By the way, I can tell you my kid brother was in the army. This is during, I would imagine, Vietnam. I'm just trying to think. It has to be the 60s, so it'd be Vietnam. Am I right? It's after Korea. So he was stationed in Hawaii in communications, and he never was Mechalel Shabbos. But you see, there they had a number of people, and the non-Jews, particularly the Afro-Americans, he told me, had such respect for him because he wore a kippah, and he was a Jew, and a Shomer Shabbos and Kashrut. They arranged the ships that he never had a problem with Shabbos. But Me'ika Hadin, I can understand very well, when you're a soldier, Suddenly, what are you going to say? I can't do my work on Friday night. I can't do my work on Shabbos. And all right, he'll have to work. And it could be that he's allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. He has no choice. He's in the army. And the entire army works on Shabbos. But what about someone volunteering? It's one thing if you're drafted. It's one thing if you're forced. What about someone volunteering? And this is his question, and I'll go a drop further with the political inference, but I just want to tell you one little story here that's extremely important that we've spoken about number of times over the last 60 years of teaching Torah. And that story, can anyone tell you what I'm about to say? That story goes back to the Birchat Shmuel, to Rabbi Baruch Belevovich. And Rabbi Baruch Belevovich tells the following story, that he heard this from Chaim Moisek Grishinsky. These were all Talmidim of Rabbi Chaim Briska, and Rabbi Chaim Moisek Grishinsky already was a well-known Rav in Vilna, and he came to speak with his Talmid Chaver, but he was really a Talmud, but not entirely a Talmud, because he was older. Of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, Rabbi Chaim Briska, and while he's talking to him, a young man walks into the Briska to the cloys where Rabbi Chaim sat all day and learned, and he says, Rabbi, I have a difficult shaila. I was just drafted into the Polish army, but I can get a position in the American Consul in Warsaw. I have contacts, I've been offered a job there, and if I take that job, I will not have to go into the army, I'm exempt. But if I get the job in the consul, I have to answer the telephone, I have to be Mechal Shabbos. Rav Chaim told him immediately, take the job in the consul, you'll be an Einus with Chilul Shabbos, but your life will not be in danger. So you see, that's what Rav Chaim paskin. The second part of the story, and it's all recorded in the Birchat Shmuel, that it's a famous tshuva. It's on the pages 38 to 41 in the Birchat Shmuel on Kedushin. It's after the first perek. Are you familiar with this, Moshe? You look it up, you won't believe your eyes. Another kid comes in an hour later, and he says, Rebbe, I have a very difficult shaila. I was just drafted into the army, but I was also accepted into the local gymnasium. And if I go to the gymnasium, I'm exempt from the army. And Rav Chaim told him, absolutely go to the army. Chas v'chalil, you should go to the gymnasium. All right, the kid walks out, he goes to the army. That's what Rav Chaim tells him. But the people standing around Rav Chaim say, Rebbe, mefashteyach nish, we don't understand you. An hour ago, a kid asked you about being Mechal Shabbos and the American Embassy in Warsaw, and you told the kid absolutely do it and don't be drafted, and now a kid has a chance to go to gymnasium without Nichol Shabbos, and you tell the kid go into the army and put your life on the line. Who knows if the kid survived? World War I, you understand, the percentage of soldiers killed was unbelievable because it was rifle against rifle. So Reb Chaim said, what's for Shaila? Chilul Shabbos, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to save your life. But you go to gymnasium, it's Aveda Zara. They can turn you into a total apikoros. It's among the three cardinal sins. You're not allowed to save your life by doing that. Chas v'chalila. And that's what Reb Chaim ruled. All right, that's a famous Birchat Shmuel. But here, absolutely, what Menashe Klein is saying is, when you have no choice, when you're drafted, when you're in the army, and if chas v'chalila you won't follow orders, you'll be court-martialed, onus rachmona patre. All right? So now, what is the shaila? It's a simple shaila, to volunteer not, but if you're drafted, all right, that's a different story. Oh, but he says, Rabbi Turk, you explain to me, why did you ask the question? Lefi she'ra'anasi mechevrat rabbanim biatzot abrit sheyatza b'mecha'a neged hatzava shemekablim muadim b'shabes v'oz לא יכולים רבנים שומרי תורה לעמוד בשבת. Wow, and look what he is saying. And this goes on time and time again, that evidently the naval reserves announced that they're opening, they're accepting volunteers, they're accepting applications. It's like the Mossad. The Mossad is now advertising to if you want to volunteer. I know exactly what you go through. 1 out of 100 finally survive. But if you want to work for the Mossad, they're particularly anxious for people who speak English or speak French or speak Arabic perfectly. You know, no matter, I speak Bronx English, I'm a Bronx kid, I know baseball, you understand what I'm saying? Mossad, if you read Bergman's book on Mossad agents captured in Jordan when they tried to kill Marshall, it was a terrible fiasco, so they claimed they were Canadians. So the Jordanians called in the Canadian ambassador, and he spoke with them about Canada. When he walked out, he said, one thing I can't tell you where they're from, but one thing I can assure you, they never set foot in Canada. You understand? So they need agents. If I'm caught by the KGB in the 1980s, they're going to ask me, where did you grow up? I grew up in the Bronx. 20-minute walk from Yankee Stadium. What is Yankee Stadium about? By the time they finish with me, I'll have them wanting to bribe me to take them to a baseball game. But you see, this is what they're looking for. All right, the Mossad is one thing. Here they're accepting applications. What day of the week? Saturday. Why Saturday? Can anyone tell me? Because at that time in America, all of America became a 5-day work week. And the one day, God forbid, then Sunday? Sunday was God's day. Sunday was holy. You have to understand. Today there's no religion left in the world. All the leftists here, they say we're not anti-religious. Chuldai is not anti-religious. Lapid is not anti-religious. It's democracy. We're not forcing you to come to our ball games, to come to the beach on Shabbos. Why do you force us to go to shul, not to have transportation? They view it like the Americans. But to have applicants on Sunday, that couldn't be in the 60s. But now that it's on Shabbos, the rabbis are protesting. Wow, this is anti-Semitic. This is against the Jews. We're good Americans. We want to volunteer. But why should be Mimachalos Shabbos? And the RCA gave a protest. You understand why? It's not that the Naval Reserves needed rabbis. They needed Navy people. They needed Jews, capable people, bright people, whatever they needed them for. But the rabbis don't want them to go on Shabbos. Imagine the Balabatim. You're in a young Israel. 5 Balabatim said, I saw this advertisement, we're interested, but can we go on Shabbos? And this goes on time and time again. Sometimes they're primaries. They make a mistake. They pick Tisha B'Av for a primary. They look at the, right here in Israel you have mistakes, right? So I made mistakes in my own life. I arranged the trip. I wind up flying. I come into America on Tzom Gedalia. I come into America on Aseret Tevis. You follow, it's not the big holidays. You don't look in advance. But they made a protest. Today in America, they will back down. Universities will schedule tests. All right, there'll be an outcry. Generally speaking, they will back down and accommodate the observant Jewish students. But he says, this is the political part, when he says, why am you are in doubt? Because you saw the president of this rabbinic organization, he doesn't mention it by name, but it's obviously the RCA, made a macha against the American army that only on Shabbos. And therefore, it seems to you that according to this president of the RCA, if this is the case, then lachatchila, you're allowed to volunteer. You're allowed to get involved in a situation where you will have to be mechallel Shabbos. And this is your question. And now, Rabbi Menashe Klein is going to get involved in a halachic answer. but he understands 100%. Now notice the question functions on two levels. On one level, it's a simple, real question. Can a kid from Denver volunteer for the American Army if he knows he'll have to be Mechallel Shabbos? On the second level, who the heck are the RCA people that they're making a protest, which implies if it wouldn't be Shabbos that you're interviewing candidates, every Chaim Yankel can go on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, as long as he's no Chilul Shabbos. It implies that going into the army is 100% mutar. My dear students, many questions. You have many Gemaras. On this question, there's only one Gemara in all of Shas. However, there is no way in the world you can explain the Gemara that will be acceptable to all the different shitat and subdivisions in the Rishonim. A simple Gemara, and yet so esoteric and enigmatic. And I have to tell you, I smile when I think of this Gemara. Why? Because the first time I heard of the Gemara was from the Rav in the 50s. I forget how he got involved. Many years later, I was talking with the Rav and learning about a question, and I mentioned the Gemara. His eyes lit up. You know, I said, Rebbe, I understood, you know, that I not only knew the Gemara, but I understood how it applies. I said, Rebbe, I know it from you. You follow? You mentioned it years ago. All right. What's the Gemara? And this Gemara, unbelievable, the implications for each and every one of us. All right, I'll introduce it very slightly. All right, what is religion about? What does religion mean? What does religion mean? What does Torah mean? What does being a Torah Jew mean? Tell me, Jack, if I offered you a bread today, a good sandwich, cheese, vegetables, nice, good Israeli bread, fresh bread, would you be concerned with Pesach today? Absolutely not. What does that have to do with Pesach? You follow? All right. Dov, should you be concerned with Shabbos today? Today is Sunday, Yom Rishon. Yomo, relax yourself. Yeah, that much I also know.
When you go shopping, you should have it in mind.
The Ramban, Hillel, Beit Shammai, Hillel Hazakim, the Shammai Hazakim. Funny. Interesting question. Do I have to be concerned with Shabbat today? Well, Shabbat is in another few days. Or no? Shabbat, as Yomo indicated, this is a constant concern, as Yitz indicated. Hayom Rishon Bishvat, Yom Yom Sheni Bishvat. In other words, they're people, Hayom Yom Shabbat Kodesh, Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbat. They're people who are machmir. Some of you follow the Vilna Gaon, so you know that the Tehillim change every day of Chol HaMoed. Am I right or wrong? The Vilna Gaon, I'm not talking non-Vilna Gaon practice. When I was in Vilna in 89, so on the one synagogue that survived, it was the synagogue where Reb Chaim Moisev davened. It was two blocks. I saw Reb Chaim, everyone in Reb Chaim Moisev, where he lived, you would see his house, second floor, two blocks from his house, if I recall correctly. On the wall were the mismorim for every holiday, the Femina Kagra. You know, I took a picture, but I was overwhelmed. I'm in the shul in Vilna and Mina Kagra. So some people are makpid, you should add on, because when you say Lamanetzeach, you don't say Hayom. You should add on before you say it, after you say it, Hayom Yom Rishon Bishabbat, Hayom Yom Sheni Bishabbat. You follow what I'm saying? To remind you that Shabbat is a constant concern. And what Yitzhak said is absolutely true. Don't we have the minig? I see my own grandchildren. I see, I'll give my great-grandson, I'll give him candy. Just this morning, I said, we're going to see great-grandchildren this week. So I said, tomorrow, can I give candy? Only with permission of their parents. Okay, only with permission of their parents, but I got to come prepared. A nice lollipop. So I remember giving grandchildren candy for the great-grandchildren, and my grandchildren say to the great-grandchildren, Zevishil Shabbat. Nishmal Zel Shabbat. And I see the great-grandchildren, Tain the Shabbat. All right, I'm overwhelmed. Can I inherit to see great-grandchildren? I already have great-grandchildren learning Mishnayot. Next year I'll have learning Gemara. It's an achievement. Baruch Hashem, ani modeh l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. But are we to be concerned? No, Yitzchak is shopping. New product has arrived. He's going to buy it. He's going to say, all right, this cake will make the bracha on Shabbat. All right, there's certainly, I don't want to minimize the importance of Shabbat. Chas v'chalila, Rafi, Shabbat is Shabbat. But let's say it's Sunday morning and I'm planning a trip and I'm leaving. Do I have to be concerned? How will I survive in Shabbat? How will I manage? A very, very interesting question. All right, believe me, there's no easy answer. Shabbat, Daf Yutet, Amud Aleph. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Mafligin Besvina, Pachat Migimel Yamim, Koldim L'Shabbat. That you're not allowed to sail on a boat less than 3 days. You have to go on the boat before Wednesday. Plain and simple. Why? Give me a... I want to... First let me do the Gemara, then we'll spend the rest of the day the reasons. Low passion. Why? We'll see. What are we talking about? You're not allowed to go on the boat until Tuesday at the latest. Only when what you're doing is reshut. Now, what does reshut mean? This is also an interesting question. Michael, we're taking a boat to London to see the Yankees versus the Red Sox next May. Is that the Varashut? Do we have to sail before Wednesday? Or can we sail Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? Interesting question. And what is your gut reaction? Chaim, what do you think? Yeah, you say you got to buy. By the way, I have the paper for you. I looked for you during the week, but you don't daven here, evidently. Okay. And also, everyone has their talis over their head. You can't tell who's who if they're married. Chaim, Tavar is shut or not?
That's
going to
be hard to say otherwise.
So I'll say otherwise right now, and I'm probably correct. Very simple. For a kefe to see a ball game, it's like a refuah. You follow? You see something, you're young again. You're a kid again. You think I'm playing games? I'm probably halachically correct, but we'll get there. Let it be. All right, the medevar mlodadvav eshut. Avoladvav mitzvah shapir dami. But if you're going l'dva mitzvah, absolutely permissible. It's Friday. The boat is leaving for Israel. By the way, no cases like this. The boat is leaving for Israel. The boat sailing Friday. A mitzvah. And the Gemara says, listen very carefully. Aval d'va mitzvah shaper dami. Uposik imo al menat lishpot v'yena shabet. Divrei Rebbe. Reb Shimon Gamliel omer einu tzarech. And this is ha'arama. What would be the good English word for harama? Like mechiret chametz. What word do we use? A legal fiction. That you're getting on the boat, you're sailing for Israel. And I know cases like this. 48, 49, 50 Mizrahi people, Bnei Akiva people, kids coming to Israel, they got notice, the boat is leaving, there's room for you. They ran to the boat with all the halachic problems. Friday, boarding, sometimes it's first sailed on Shabbos, didn't leave. What do you do then? Can you have to make Kiddush on the boat, come back the next morning, kind of shvita, whatever. So lot in the halacha. But what's important here is, like Yomo said, like Rabbi Rubin said, Shabbat? What do you mean? Are you going to be machal? Who are we playing games with? It's Friday. Tomorrow is Shabbat. You're certainly going to be machal on Shabbos. All right, so you make a deal with the people on the boat, with the captain. Let's say all the people on the boat have to take turns with the oars, have to take turns with the furnace. Exempt me on Shabbos. Try to make the deal. You know the captain's not going to listen. It's a legal fiction. But at least show you're concerned with Shabbos. The next day you'll be an onus, but it's Lidva Mitzvah. So you have to do what you have to do. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, even the legal fiction is not necessary. Friday is Friday, it's not Shabbos. You're allowed on the boat. And here's a famous Gemara that you should all recognize. It goes back to a sugya in Pesachim, Daf Nun Aleph. Umitzur letzidon afilu be'erev Shabbat mutar. That from Tzur to Tzidon, Tyre to Sidon in Lebanon, and fortunately or unfortunately, I know the area. I fought there in the 82 war, the first Lebanese war. And we have, there are many stories. We had some big, big tragedies there. Remember the building that was blown up and so many soldiers were killed. Ugh, what we've gone through in Lebanon. But that, they're very close to each other. So when they're very close to each other, you can go on the boat. You don't have to make any conditions. No one in the world is going to bother you because, logically speaking, you're going to reach shore well before Shabbat. Why did I tie this into a sugya in Sakim Daf Nun Amid Bet? Nu Moshe, remember the sugya there? What's the sugya?
Yeah, the minhag not to.
So that gets us involved with the whole question of minhag hamakom. That some people, even though Tzur to Tzidon was so close, but nevertheless, you don't take chances on Erev Shabbat. And I needn't give any examples because all of you lived the El Al fiasco a few weeks ago. Right or wrong? And I can tell you myself, one time, I always try never to travel a big distance on Friday. And one time, I was supposed to go back to Israel on a Wednesday night, and this important meeting for Shvut Ami involved some heavy money for Russian Jewry, and it was rescheduled. And in order to make the meeting, and they needed me there, because the money was being given in my honor, I had to rearrange the trip home on Thursday. I can tell you my heart was in my mouth the entire trip. The plane was delayed, inevitably many times. It wasn't delayed that long. But then you got to go through customs. You got to get a cab. I wound up falling into the house 20 minutes before Lichtenstein. All right, it was an hour before sunset, 20 minutes before Lichtenstein in Yerushalayim. And whenever I travel in America, I always tell people leave enough time for every conceivable traffic jam. Don't tell me it's 2 hours to East Brunswick. Leave 3.5 hours. So no matter what happens, we're there with Menuchat HaNefesh. And this is exactly the basic Gemara is, you're allowed to travel from the Bronx to Manhattan. But there were people, Tzur to Tzidon, Bronx to Manhattan, there were people who were machmir. And that's the question when you come and move from Denver to New York, and in New York they have a chumrah, do you keep up? Do you accept the chumrah right away? When do you accept the chumrah? If the chumrah is from Denver, when can you leave the chumrah behind you? And Michael, do you know what sugi this Gemara is so important to? Yom Tiv Sheni Shel Galyot. many people tied together the Gemara im Sachim, this whole concept with Yontif Sheni, Makom Shenahagu. And there I observed 2 days, I'm now in Israel, am I part of the Israel community? Is it enough just to walk here? Or is it where my mind is, where my feet are? It's a very important sugya for the Yontif Sheni problem if you take Reb Moshe Feinstein or Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach's point of view. It's not an important sugya with the Rav's point of view, with Reb Chaim Brisker's point of view, with the Chacham Tzvi's point of view. There it's clear where your feet, nothing to do where your community is, where your membership is. You follow?
The next Gemara talks about Yontif Sheni. No, I'm well aware.
I believe those Shimmer online. Okay, but I don't want to... Okay, one other part of the sugya. One other part. Right connected. Tana Rabbanon. Ein Tsarin al Ayarot Shel Nachrim Pachot Mi Gimel Yamim Kodem Shabbat. Vim Hitchilu Ein Mapsikin. What about you're in the army? Do you lay siege? When do you start the siege? And here too, 3 days before, not allowed. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, allowed. But once you start the siege, you do not stop. And this raises many interesting questions. The Israeli army, does this apply? When do you start a siege? When do you stop? When can you plan? When can you surprise? Halacha lemaisa, I would say, in modern warfare, this is not a factor, because you can start a siege. What does a siege mean? There are many other factors involved, more than just a simple siege. Intelligence, surprise. You want, this is pikuach nefesh, devar mitzvah, ki b'sheretz Yisrael, milchemet mitzvah, habola hagecha, hashken v'hargol, but a very, very interesting Gemara. Okay, so I reiterate, the heart of the Gemara is you don't board a ship 3 days before Shabbat. You look into Rashi, Rashi basically doesn't give any reason. This explains some of the words of the Gemara. Tzur l'tzidon, Rashi explains, why do people want to go Dafka Erev Shabbos? Leave it for another day in the week. But he explains, Erev Shabbos Hayasham Yom HaShuk, that in Erev Shabbos there was the marketplace. And people had a shop, and Friday was the day, and that's why so many people were involved in traveling from Tzur Tzidon Dafka on Friday. All right? A very down-to-earth, simple, practical explanation. All right, why can't you board the ship? What are the reasons? All right. Let's take another Gemara. Very, very fascinating. One reason, very simple. It has nothing to do with the boat. It has to do with the fact that the boat is traveling in water. And are you allowed to go swimming on Shabbos? Yes or no? What's the Issa Malacha? Everyone takes for granted we can't go swimming. So, Beitza Taflamid Vav Amid Bet. And open Mishnah, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfot. And the Mishnah says, these are the prohibitions on Shabbos Mishum Shvut. Rabbinic prohibition. Lo olin be'ilan. You're not allowed to climb a tree. Fine. Lo rochvim al gabe behema. You're not allowed to ride on top of a behema. It's a Mishnah. Lo shatin al pinei hamayim. You're not allowed to swim. V'lo metapchim, v'lo mesafkin, v'lo meraktin. And you're not allowed to clap your hands. You're not allowed to dance. All this is a din the Rabbanan. Why? Why can't you do all this? Why can't you ride an animal? You know why? Rashi explains. The Gemara explains. You take a branch. You rip it off. Just whack the animal. He should go faster. Why can't you swim? Ah, here already. Look into Rashi, look into Tosfot, because if you swim, you may not know how to swim properly. You may be in deep water. You may be frightened, and you'll make something to float on Shabbat. Tosfos explains, you'll take a klicheres, you'll close it, water won't get in, you'll lie on top of the klicheres, or you'll hold on to it, and you'll float. Lekach tzaf al pinei hamayim. Rashi explains, kli shel guma, you weave something together to make a mat that will float, and you'll float on top of the water. So you see, there is one basic pshat here. The whole problem with getting on a boat is that a boat resembles swimming. And if you're swimming, it is a nisa de rabbanan, whatever the reason may be, but because it's moving in the water. That is the pshat. That's exactly what they say.
I
agree with you. No, I agree that this is a hard concept, but some of the Rishonim say this. We'll see. There's much more. But this is one basic pshat.
What about the issue of wringing out a towel?
That will come to in the Monday class. Wringing out a towel, forget about now. That's the issue we raised today. But here they raised the issue. It seems it was quite common that they made floats. And if you make a float, it resembles the boat moving along. And this is one pshat in the Gemara. I agree with you. This pshat is not convincing because, as you just said, there's a big difference between an individual swimming and a boat moving. But this is, according to some Rishonim, a nisa de Rabbanan, and they tseichanan, they send you to the Gemara in Beitza, Daf Lamed Vav Amid Beit. So this is one pshat. That's all right. We'll have other reasons, you'll see. But I want to move sideways now, in parentheses, and ask you a different question. You just heard a Mishnah. Did you listen to what I just read in the Mishnah? Tell me, Yomo, you went to the Stolen Rebbe for a Shabbos one time? Colin Stolen, did they dance on Shabbat? Yes or no? No, tell me. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we don't dance on Shabbat?
No.
How do we clap hands on Shabbat?
No, we don't.
You sing after, if you're Talmud Chacham, it's an interesting question. What, we don't dance on Yom Tov? What are you talking about? I can tell you in Yeshiva Shel Pesachol Chanan, we were up all night learning. And towards the morning, Rav Lifshitz and Rav Lessin, and we were singing Run Yachat, Kochvei Boker, right before we started davening. And hundreds of students were dancing. No? So it's an interesting question. I asked Rav Lessin, I said, Rebbe, Vikem in Tansim, I'm a Fusha Mishnah in Beitza. And he gave me the classic answer that he didn't, I know what you're saying, relax, I'll say it in a minute, but he gave me a much more basic classic answer, which is so important. I write about this in Washington and in a similar context. He said, I'm living it in Yiddish, but I'm trying to say it in English. We danced in Slabodka, and the Levush Mordechai, the Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, and the Mashgiach, the Alta, Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, danced with us. If they danced with us, it's the biggest sign, the Gresta Simen, that it's Mutta. And the reason it's Mutta, by the way, I have to tell you, it's a real problem. The Rishonim raise it. Tosfos already says, because the original Takanarik dance singing was Shemi Yitaken Kli. That they'd have musical instruments and the strings broke, so they would tie the strings, attach the strings, replace the strings, so they asid the clapping, the singing, the dancing on Shabbat Yantiv. But nowadays that we sing and we dance and we clap hands without musical instruments, the original Takana de Rabbanan no longer applies. And I would say what's happened here is the Hasidic world has won out. Okay? We have to bow our heads, but the Hasidic world has won out. But very interesting. So this is one basic approach. Tosfot, by the way, says that it's forbidden because it resembles the swimming on Shabbat. Okay, that's the first basic approach. Yes. This is what they say, that you relax, you'll see. Yomo, yes?
One question. How did they dance in Slovakia and how did they dance in Yeshiva on Shavuos morning? Did they jump up and down with both?
No, we danced in a circle. We didn't jump up and down, which would be an answer. It's not real dancing, you're just staying in your place. No, real circles. A second shot is the question of Tchumim. You go on a boat, you go out of the Tchum. If you hold that Tchum, the Oraita, it's certainly a tremendous problem. And a boat can sail very far. Even if you'll hold the Tchum is Machne Yisrael and 12 mil, but a boat can do 12 mil in an hour.
You compare dancing to sitting in a boat quietly, you can read a Gemara, and dancing is moving all
the way. Beside, I understand. What's important is we've given you a reason swimming. We've given you a reason tchumim, that the boat will go beyond the tchum Shabbat. And it could be it's only an Issa de Rabbanon, it could be it's an Issa de Oraita. And this would be a tremendous question. And many of the Rishonim learn that this basically is the problem, that you're going on a boat and you're going to go more than Tchum Shabbat. Notice none of these first two reasons have anything to do with Issa Malacha. You're on the boat, you're doing nothing. Like Herbie said, you're sitting, you're reading a Gemara. All right, one second. The real reason that dominates our thinking we'll touch upon next week, but I want to give you a third reason, which I have to tell you, many of the poskim give the third reason. The Rambam, the Rif. Moshe, I haven't said a word yet. Let me give
In terms of the second reason, it's only if it's below 10 fachim.
Yeah, I understand. Right. If it's only where it's... If it's above 10 fachim, it's makom haptur. So then you don't have to worry about a tchum. But a boat generally sinks into the water, right? But it would have to be. But the ocean wouldn't be a problem, or the Yamagadol wouldn't be a problem, because you're going to be above 10 tvachim. All right, fine. But the second reason is the problem of tchum. The third reason is a very down-to-earth, simple reason. Have you ever been on a boat? Malk and I, in the year 2000, the Australian community invited me to be the guest of the Mizrahi. I was there for a month, 2 weeks in Melbourne, 2 weeks in Sydney. So they asked, how do we pay you? Well, all of you know, when it comes to money, Rakefet is not a big money man. I said, you don't have to pay me. But what I'll ask is, why don't you arrange some touring that Malk and I would never do on our own? And they said, fine. And then they got back to me, would you like to see New Zealand or would you like to see the Great Barrier Reef? So Malk and I made a cheshbon. Let's see the Great Barrier Reef, one of the wonders of the world. It's a different part of Australia. And New Zealand, you know, we're seeing Australia, some of the scenery is not much different than New Zealand, but the Great Barrier Reef is one of a kind. So we chose the Great Barrier Reef. And they said, great, because in Melbourne you'll be very busy. There are a lot of Jews, a lot of from Jews, but in Sydney we'll knock out part of a week and you'll go to the big hotel where everyone from there, you take a boat to the Great Barrier Reef, and it was all arranged. Fine. So here are two people in the prime of life, the year 2000, Malka and Aharon, and they're taking this boat to the Great Barrier Reef. I don't recall if it was an hour and a half, not the end of the world, the trip, and the whole way we're throwing up. It was murder, sea sickness. My dear friends, Shabbat is coming. You have to observe it. You have to be happy. You have to enjoy Shabbat. If you're going to go on within 3 days, the chances are that you will be sick. And let me quote the Rif. Mi shelo nichnas b'sfina shlosha yamim lefnei ha-shabbat muval mitutaleha v'ein lo oneg Shabbat klal. No oneg Shabbat. It's all new. It's all a new experience. The boat, the shaking, and you can imagine in primitive times, small boats. The bigger the boat, the less you feel the tiltul, the seasickness, the tribulations. I can tell you, I flew with my work with the army. Today I can reveal all the details. But one time a general in the army contacts me. They're going to give money to a priest in South Lebanon. These people were Christians who helped Israel, and we're supporting this priest. And they want some prominent American rabbis to come along and see the transaction and be able to talk about it, not publicly in the newspapers, but in their congregations to create goodwill, and people should understand what Israel is doing. So I contacted, I remember, one of the rabbis in a visiting, I got hold of Manny Holzer was here. I have to look at my pictures. It may be your uncle was with us too. We had three rabbis. And we're on this army plane. It was very interesting. Security had to be checked in advance that there are no incidents, that we can go, that we can land. And we're on this little army plane that seats maybe 8-9 people. Let me tell you, I was the happiest person alive when the whole trip was over. You're shaking, you're feeling the wind. Do you have any idea what's involved? A little plane. That's what we're talking about here. You get on a big plane, an El Al plane, a 747, Ribbono Shel Olam, you can hold a cup of whiskey in your hand and not one drop will spill out. You understand? This is what they're talking about, the seasickness. And I want to tell you, go look at the Rambam and you'll see word by word the way he paskins. This here, let me read the Rambam to you and end off the class. Shabbat Perek Lamed Halacha Yud Gimel. Ein Tzarin Al Hayarat Shel Goyim Pachat Mishlosh Yamim Kodem HaShabbat. Kedesh Titchashev Datan Sheikh Amul Khamar Alaihem V'lo yiyu mavul halimu trudim b'shabbat. You're not allowed to start the war, to start the battle until Wednesday. I mean, then you're allowed. After Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, absolutely not allowed. Because you won't be relaxed. You'll be all upset. If you start Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, by the time Shabbos comes, you're used to battle. You're used to fighting. You're used to war. All right. How true that is, I don't know. But could be. In primitive society, it was correct. Labriyut. Umipneze ein mafligin besfina pachat mishloshi yamim kodem Shabbat kidei shetitja shev dai koalav kodem ha-Shabbat v'lo yitzta'er yeter midai. And the same thing, you're not allowed to board a ship until Tuesday evening. From that point on, you have to be concerned with Shabbat, you have to be concerned with seasickness, you have to be concerned with Oneg Shabbat, and not put yourself into a position where you're going to be throwing up, where you're going to be upset. Shabbat is Shabbat. So we have, excuse me, the Rambam, Perek Lamed, it's right at the end, Halacha Yud Gimel. Right near the end of Hilchot Shabbat. It's the Rambam, it's the Shulchan Aruch. You won't believe three different reasons. None of them are concerned with the individual during Isurim on Shabbat. We have the Rach, we have the Rush, we have the Rambam, we have the Rif, we have the Tosfot. Three different reasons. Resemble swimming, a problem with chum, a problem with seasickness. If these would be the reasons and the pshat in the Gemara, we'd have nothing to talk about. It would be absolutely permissible that someone can volunteer for the army, volunteer for the chaplaincy, let a volunteer on Sunday, on Monday, on Tuesday, no problem whatsoever. But then we have a fourth reason, which attributes to the Balmor, right? You're saying Balmor, the Pzrachia HaLevi, and that reason will keep us occupied for quite a few weeks to come. So my dear students, on this Sunday, on this lonely day when politics is driving Rakefet mad, very sad. One split after another. Dov, I've lived here too long. It happens, politicians think they're Mashiach. You follow? I know who I am. I'm the happiest person in the world that I have more than a minion sitting and listening to me here. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming. Politicians think they're going to capture 1 million votes. And you see what the problem is? We talk to each other. If we took Jack, who do you talk to? Jack has not spoken to anyone who is not a Mizrachiite or a Gudist or a Chassid or a Litvak in the last week. Right or wrong? But you can't draw conclusions from them. Go to North Tel Aviv, walk the streets, stop the people with the dogs. I once got into a car from the airport. I still can't get over it. And I'm wearing a kippah, and there's this lady, a professor, with this. And it was right after Rabin's assassination. She accused me in the Sheirut of assassinating Rabin.
I got hit in the head in the bus.
You got hit in the head in the bus. The hatred for the kippah was like overwhelming. And these Jews have a say. They're also part of the Israeli scene. It's beyond words. And everyone thinks, I'm going to get a million. I'll tell you what my dream is. I'll tell you what my dream is now. That what remains of Bayit Yehudi and Ichad Lumi, they'll bring the people from Shas with Elie Yishai into that party. That would be quite reasonable. But then I worry, Shas, if you vote Shas, you waste your vote. They won't cross the threshold.
Elie Yishai is not Shas.
That's why I say he could go. He used to be.
He used to be, but
They just accused Rav Mazuz of being a Mizrachiite. You understand? It's unbelievable what's going on. Who accused him? The Panovitcher crowd. My dear students, to reiterate, we're not going to solve all the politics, but let me tell you, you never have a dull moment in Israel. Chaim became a citizen of Israel this year. Chaim, I can assure you, you should live and be well for the next 100 years. There will never be a dull moment in Israel. The Jews have an ability to keep it lively. It makes a Shakespearean Broadway play look second rate with all the plots and secondary plots and the third level of plots here. Unbelievable. The only tragedy is the future of the Jewish people depend upon us. Follow? That's the tragedy. This is a serious Shakespearean play. What did we do today? Okay, we introduced the two Rabbi Turks. I thank Josh Schneider. Of course, without him, I would be so confused between Sam and Seymour, Shmuel and Shmuel. Who is the RCA one? Who is the Igud HaRabbanim one? And the question is a double-edged sword. It's a halakhic question, and at the same time, it's a hashkafic question. It's a shtech. Is RCA right or are they wrong? All right. Then we introduced the material. We introduced the Gemara. We gave three different pshatim that we find in the Rishonim. But the most important pshat, which I think intuitively we'll all agree has to be the heart of the sefer, is yet to come. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, I pick up right after World War II. And I have to tell you, there was a book written on Lendingo. Two people sent me the information, and I have a feeling what I quoted to you was reprinted from that book. I'd like to see the original book. Maybe tomorrow someone will figure out how to come up with it. Now, first of all, this is a very important shiur from Rav Asher Weiss, and this is the shiur where he goes ballistic against people who don't vaccinate their children. And you have all the sources here. Please give that to Moshe. Does anyone want the latest copy of Hamayan? It just came off the press. A very interesting issue. You'll see it's exactly as I describe it. Classic Talmud Torah with Chochmat Yisrael overtones. And very fascinating. It deals here with advertising and the concepts of halacha with advertising and how they advertise. Very fascinating. This is Australian Jewish News. This was my host in Sydney, that's Reb Chaim Gutnick. He's also the Av Beit Din of New Zealand. And there's here involved with the court decision.
What's his relationship to Yossi Gutnick?
It's his brother, a younger brother, Moshe Gutnick. And a whole story about they wouldn't go to a secular court. They were in a Beit Din and they were summoned to the secular court and now they lost the case and they're being fined heavy money. This, if you found what's going on in New York with the Women's March, it's against Trump, it's against this, that. It also turns out that they're being accused of anti-Semitism. And this is a New York Times article, very fascinating. And subsequently, the march was called off.
We finally got around to figuring that out. It's been that way for a year.
Yeah, it's interesting. And
anti-Semitism and the Women's March.
Right, right. And it was subsequently called off now. Even though they swore there was no anti-Semitism, nothing. This is a graduate of the Kollel who's fighting the Israeli rabbinate, Rabbi Seth Farber, graduate of our Kollel, my own Talmud, seeking an end to gender discrimination for female halacha experts. And it deals with the women who have Yoatzap halacha, that they should be allowed to take the rabbinic tests for what amounts to smicha, you know, in halacha.
So
So far the rabbinate refuses, and he's Rabbi Faber is, you read the article. No, yeah, they have to keep it separate. Zelichud to Zelichud. We can't have women rabbis, but you can have women who are experts in dinei tarat mishpacha. If I eat in your house, my samachan, your wife, you understand? So there's no shaila there. And tarat mishpacha would be a tremendous help for rabbanim. We see that more women ask shailas, so it's worth everything.
Right?
New York Times. As China cracks down on churches, Christians declare we will not forfeit our faith. It's hard to believe that in the year 2019, there's still the communist opposition to religion. But the New York Times explains it, that they view the church, it's going to overthrow the communist regime. This is another, I have many students, this is another Kollel graduate, Rabbi Mark Schneier. Israel Gulf ties are coming, says Rabbi the King of Bahrain. And he's Rabbi Mark Schneier has now been invited to get Bahrain ready. The Gulf states that they're going to have soccer competition, and they're inviting every Israeli, and they're making kosher food available, and Rabbi Schneier will be there.
Married 5 times.
Herbie, I am well aware of it.
Yeah, so I wouldn't even quote him.
One of his, what do you mean? This is news, Mark. You can't escape. One of his early marriages was to my own student. And these are two articles from the New York Times. Paul Krugman, who probably is totally Jewish. The other one is by Thomas Friedman, who I believe is half Jewish. And their hatred for Trump is indescribable.
And what happened to the guy who used to be editor of the Post? He's against Trump all the time.
It's unbelievable. And this, if anyone's planning to move to Belgium, I advise you, stay home. Shchita outlawed in Belgium as of January 1st, 2019. So anyone listening in Antwerp or Brussels, the Rebbe invites you to join us in building a Jewish state. And to my student Chaim, this is last week's Mekar Rishon. You know, I first get it today, tomorrow, it takes me a while. But if you can manage, but I'm telling you in advance, it's a very open paper. In other words, you'll find here people who think like I think, people who are more liberal. You'll find here right-wing Orthodox Zionists, centrist, leftist. It gives a platform to everybody. I have to tell you, the level is very interesting, and some of the articles are fabulous. And you have to know other opinions too. It makes you think. It doesn't mean you have to agree, but at least you have to be able to think to respond. My dear students, until we meet again tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem at 9:05, I wouldn't miss the class. For all the silver that they're selling on Rehov Meir Sharim and the various silver shops, it's unbelievable. When you walk by, we have some wealthy shop owners. That's all I can say. Hatzofim, if I'm pronouncing it right. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya.
How are you? I'm doing okay? I'll see you in a couple of weeks. I'm doing my second meet tomorrow.
Oh, so sign this.